Good afternoon. The time is 2:25. This is a shortened version of Vox Pop. It's Medical Monday, December 14th. Support for Medical Monday comes from Saratoga Hospital, offering its pain management program, led by Gordon Kuhar, focused on reducing or eliminating chronic pain with patient-centered treatment plans, saratogahospital.org. Joining us for this Medical Monday is urologist Dr. Maria Voznesensky of Capital Region Urology, a practice of St. Peter's Health Partners Medical Associates. Dr. Voznesensky is board certified in urology and practices general and female urology. She specializes in pelvic floor reconstruction and minimally invasive surgery. Her professional interests include female urology, urethral stricture disease, and male impotence and incontinence. If you have a question, give us a call. This is a short show, and we will do the best we can to get everybody in. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can, of course, email us at voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Dr. Maria Voznesensky, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thank you for hanging around while Governor Cuomo did his COVID-19 briefing. Sometimes the times change on these, and this one actually, we got very late notice on it, and so I appreciate your patience. We are on the air, and as we get started here, before we take a call or two, maybe you could educate me on this business of minimally invasive surgery and how it has changed what you do. Perhaps you could give us an example of a procedure done 20 or 30 years ago that would have been really invasive and required a long recuperation time compared to today's much more minimally invasive way of doing things.
Yeah, sir, certainly, I'd be happy to. So I will kind of draw examples from my field of expertise and specialty, which is pelvic floor reconstruction. So one example is one of the things that I deal with is actually female organs falling out. So what we call pelvic organ prolapse, which can be different things, bladder, uterus, sometimes actually the back wall of the rectum can be protruding. Sometimes I kind of liken it to a female hernia, except not in the groin, but, you know, in the pelvic region parts. Mm-hmm. And so an example of a surgery that would have been done, for example, in the 80s would have been something called a sacrocolpopexy, which is a long word, but essentially the plan in that procedure is to lift and hoist everything back up and to put it into position, usually using some kind of material, most commonly a mesh. Disclaimer here, this is not your, you know, typical lawsuit meshes that you see advertised.
Yes.
I always have to say that because mesh these days is a bad word.
Right.
But it is, we can go further kind of talking more about that. But in this specific scenario, what happens is, you know, the mesh is used to kind of lift the organs. So back in the good old days, it would require a large incision, usually belly button down to the pubic bone. Couple of nights overnight in the hospital, long recovery, significant pain. And these days, if the candidate is appropriate for it, we can actually do it with just a couple small incisions and using robotics. So really, it's come a long way in that regard.
And does that require a whole new skill set for those in your profession?
It does, yeah. So, you know, urology has really progressed. One of the cool things I think about our field is that we tend to embrace cutting-edge technologies. So we were actually the first to do endoscopic-type procedures, which is how we approach a lot of kidney stones, going in through natural orifice through the urethra and then getting into the kidney with very small cameras. And later that was actually adopted by gastroenterology. So we were pretty early there. And similarly with robotics, you know, the initial kind of early stage in its fetal stage, the robot was actually done, was what we call laparoscopic surgery. So it was still with a camera and little incisions, but we didn't have the free range of movement and the 3D view that we have currently with the robotic platform. So it's been an evolution, but these days, depending where you train, I would say most residents coming out of modern programs, they have some exposure to robotics. It's just a question of whether they then go on to subspecialize or, you know, feel they have the clinical ability to do those cases. But I think more and more it's becoming standard of care. And that's what patients expect and I think training programs provide.
We are joined today by Dr. Maria Voznesensky of Capital Region Urology. Amazing the technological advances that have happened and the miniaturization of cameras and being able to place them without making cuts. But you mentioned the mesh, and that's older school technology. But I think we could transpose that question to the cutting edge of technology. When you bring something like a new camera or a new device or a new way of doing your job, you are then potentially opening yourself up to some legal ramifications or civil ramifications or otherwise. How do you make sure that those new technologies are safe and ready to go?
I mean, I think one of the things we really rely on, and we're very lucky in the U.S. with this, is we have a really strong guidance from our medical societies. So in the female pelvic medicine world, we have OGS, which is Society for Obstetrics and Gynecology. And then there's also Society for Female Medicine called SUFU, and then the American Urology Association. And so combined, these are governing bodies that we rely on to give us guidance and give us standards of care. And these come out through essentially recommendations, papers that support appropriate practices given different conditions. Also, we have the FDA, which is, you know, very active in helping protect patients. So, for example, just to get back to the whole mesh debacle. So what happened there was the field of prolapse, folks were putting in mesh vaginally, which that is the no-no these days. That's what the FDA said was a bad idea for a bunch of different reasons, mainly safety, pain afterwards. But if you take a different type of surgery, which is for urinary incontinence, what we call stress incontinence, and that's the kind of surgery that you have if you cough, sneeze, laugh, and that would be something called a female sling. There, the FDA and all of our governing bodies have said, yep, using a piece of mesh to help support the urethra is the gold standard. It's the best way that we know currently of how to get patients what they need afterwards and get them recovery. So, you know, I think it's looking at these governing bodies within the field, relying on expertise that comes down to you from large studies, from large universities, you know, folks that are smarter than I am to help kind of guide my practice and make sure I'm following standards of care.
Dr. Maria Voznesensky joins us today on Vox Pop Medical Monday, and we'll get to your calls now. 800-348-2551 is the number. Joe in Middletown. Joe, you're on.
Yes, thank you. So I've been ordered by my urologist. He's ordering a biopsy of my prostate, and I have to decide whether I want that done in his office or in what I think is described as a surgical suite. And I've elected to be totally put out. They said, you know, you can take a local. I'm going to be totally put out, as I've been for colonoscopies. I've had lots of colonoscopies. I know what it's like to be totally out. But I've never had it done in a doctor's office. So my question is, I'm guessing that either in a hospital setting where I've had that done or I've had them done in surgical suites, might they have more equipment there or more resources there on hand if I enter into distress and as a result of the anesthesia? What are some questions I can ask the practice? What do you have? Do you have everything a suite would have? Are there certain machines a suite might have that I should make sure they have in a doctor's office or any other equipment that would be helpful if I'm dying and they can't wake me up?
So I think a couple kind of things to separate out there in that question. So one is issues with the anesthesia and waking up and, you know, making sure you get through that. Yeah, of course. You know, that would definitely be something specific to the center where you have that done. Classically, I'll tell you, most people do not get more than just local anesthesia for the prostate biopsies. Most offices around the country, what they do is what we call a nerve block, and then the patient usually is awake for that. So, you know, most of the time, the only anesthesia that you need to recover from the office is just the numbing needle that's placed. So that's kind of that end of it. As far as, you know, making sure that everything is available, you know, I think the key thing with feeling comfortable is going to someone who has done many of these, and this is a routine for their practice. So, you know, these days, I think it's very appropriate to ask your surgeon, you know, is this something you commonly do? How many of these have you done? What's your expertise? And we kind of expect that question these days. as long as they say, yep, you know, this is something I routinely do, you know, a couple times a week, a couple times a month, then you know that they have a pathway and they're going to be set up and you're not going to be a guinea pig for, you know, the first one of these that they're doing in a setup.
Joe, thanks for the call. But does that question offend you when someone asks you that?
Me specifically, no. You know, I understand where they're coming from. I want them to be comfortable. So, you know, I just explain them kind of my expertise and my background. And usually I think everybody's on the same page, which is a good page to be on.
We are joined today by Dr. Maria Voznesensky of Capital Region Urology. The number to call here on Medical Monday is 800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Jim in Matamoras, Pennsylvania. Jim.
Have you seen a decrease in other infectious diseases such as chlamydia and pseudomonas since the pandemic started?
Sorry, that was a little bit hard to hear. I heard pseudomonas and chlamydia, but I was
He said, have you seen an increase in those type of STDs since the pandemic began?
No, I would say I've seen an increase in things that are exacerbated by stress, such as pelvic pain and bladder pain. Those things are definitely on the rise. STDs, not so much. I would say steady state for Viagra prescriptions, you know.
Okay. Well, thank you, Jim. We appreciate that call. Our number here, 800-348-2551. Roberta in North Adams is next. Hi, Roberta, you're on.
Hello, doctor. I had endometrial cancer more than 10 years ago, and I had radiation and chemotherapy and surgery. And ever since then, I've had incontinence and struggled with it. I saw a doctor years ago who wanted to write me a prescription, but I've been really hesitant because of the anticholinergics that may affect brain function. So I'd like to know if I would be a candidate for some kind of surgery that might help.
So, you know, definitely I would encourage you to talk to your family doc, and if you need a referral from them, to get seen by urology locally. As far as, you know, first of all, I'm also really glad that you've recovered and are doing well from your cancer as well. Yeah, radiation is tough because it can definitely cause some lasting damage to the tissue. So it treats the cancer, but at the same time, we often are left with kind of the side effects from it. Good news is there are other things available for incontinence these days besides anticholinergic. There is a different class of medicines called beta-3 agonist. Mirbetriq is the currently only approved one in that category, but I believe there's a new one coming out of a similar class. And then we actually have office-based and surgery-based procedures for overactivity as well. And those range from Botox, which can be done in the office, to what we call peripheral tibial nerve stimulator and sacroneuromodulation. One of them is kind of like having a small acupuncture needle that's placed in the back of your calf with therapy that's delivered in the office. And the other one is actually an implantable. I liken it to a bladder pacemaker. So there's a lot of cool things these days that are available, which, you know, maybe would be more helpful to you than kind of the old school medications of 10, 15 years ago.
Okay. And I would just see a urologist for that to be evaluated?
I would, yeah. I mean, what I would do is I would ask either your family doc, who they know locally that works with women and sees overactive bladder.
No, I had seen a urologist about 10 years ago, and I haven't been back. So I guess that's what I'll do. Thank you very much.
Yeah, my pleasure. Good luck.
Thanks a lot, Roberta. Our number here on Medical Monday is 800-348-2551. We're joined today by Dr. Maria Voznesensky of Capital Region Urology. And let's take one more before our next break. Sharon in Albany. Sharon, you're on.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I saw my GYN about 2 weeks ago, and they did a routine urine analysis during my checkup. I told her I was having some issues where I had a painful urgency to go. I could not empty my bladder completely. I would have to keep going back. She indicated that because I'm 71 years old, sometimes your bladder stretches and this happens, and she could give me medication if I wanted to try it. There was a little blood in my urine, but don't worry about it. And that was the end of it. I went home and started drinking cranberry juice, and it's totally gone away unless I cannot get to a bathroom and I have to hold it for a little while, it all starts over again. Is this something I should have looked at?
So it sounds like it was uncomfortable and now has improved, but not 100% gone. Is that about right?
That's right.
Okay.
It improved after I started drinking cranberry juice.
Sure, yeah. Do you know if, I guess I'm not sure if you're comfortable answering personal questions about your lab results, but do you know if you had an infection at that time? Did they check for a urine culture to see if you had a UTI?
She told me I did not have an infection and they would send it up for culture, but I haven't heard anything back.
Okay. Yeah, I would say, you know, certainly circle back and see if anything grew. Usually no news is good news, but sometimes, you know, things fall through the cracks, so I would just check. I would say if things are improving, give it another couple of weeks. If you're feeling great by then, you know, this is resolved. If not, certainly getting seen, I think, is never wrong. You know, occasionally we can have just inflammation in the bladder, what we call cystitis, without a bacterial cause. And it can feel just like a urinary tract infection. But we know that actually, even if it is bacterial, about a third of those can get better on their own. You know, if you think about it, humanity made it without the advent of antibiotics for, you know, multiple hundreds of years. And we progressed. So even though we're in this culture of, you know, UTI equals antibiotics, sometimes they can improve.
Should I be concerned that she mentioned there was a little bit of blood, but not to be concerned?
I would definitely recommend following up on that. We usually recommend doing at least a one-time evaluation if you do have consistent blood in your urine outside of, you know, an acute event. So, yeah, I would definitely at least get a repeat urine just to see where you're at.
I will see my family doctor in about a week. So based on what you just told me, I will mention to her and see if she'll follow up on it.
Yeah, I think that sounds like a good plan.
Sharon, thank you very much for the call. It is Medical Monday. We're joined today by Dr. Maria Voznesensky of Capital Region Urology. 800-348-2551 is the number. We'll be right back. Vox Pop on WAMC. It's a Medical Monday. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. Dr. Maria Voznesensky of Capital Region Urology is our guest today. And, Doctor, before we go back to the phones, a couple of email messages have come in. This one is from a lady who doesn't want to leave her name, so we'll just call her Sue, just randomly. Sue writes, I've enjoyed a healthy sexual relationship with my husband of 38 years, but now, as he's almost 60, sometimes he loses the erection, or it seems like it takes him forever to ejaculate. Is this just the indignities of aging, or does he need to see a urologist? And that's from No Name Please.
So, Susan, I would say the beauty of what I do with urology is I do a lot of quality of life stuff. So, you know, is it a must that somebody's erections are perfect? No. But if it's impacting your relationship and it's something you wish was improved, we do have lots of options we can explore there, starting from medications all the way to implant surgery. So I would say have a chat, see if this is something you both wish to work on. And if so, definitely a urologist is a good next step.
All right. One more email and then back to the phones we go. And if you have a question for Dr. Voznesensky, give us a shout at 800-348-2551. This email from Tammy. Tammy says, is medullary sponge kidney considered a kidney disease in terms of determining comorbidities for risk factors and contracting other diseases? Also, should someone with MSK have their children tested for MSK? And that's from Tammy. And Tammy, thank you for the big words. It always makes me seem even dumber. Okay, doctor, go ahead.
So medullary sponge kidney, I'm not aware of that being a recommendation for testing in your offspring and your kids.
What is that?
It's basically a condition where the kidneys can have some chronic troubles. Specifically, they're known to form stones. They can have these little fluid-filled sacs that are kind of like defects within the normal anatomy of the kidney. And they can lead to some scarring. And if people are really unlucky, they can actually have some kidney disease over time as well. Generally, there's not much that we specifically do to monitor them. You know, if you're somebody who has kidney stones with medullary sponge kidney, we still would treat them the same way as we would other stones. You know, we kind of address them as they pass. The sponge kidneys, they can often be filled with stones, in which case it's very hard to clear them out. And the key thing with maintaining kidney health is actually doing all the correct health and lifestyle things, keeping a healthy weight, maintaining your blood pressure in a good range, cholesterol in good control, kind of all those general good health type of behaviors.
We're joined today by Dr. Maria Voznesensky of Capital Region Urology. One more email. This is from Nancy in Wilton. Nancy writes, my 89-year-old mother-in-law continually leaks urine and must wear briefs at all time. She had a bladder mesh years ago. All doctors have said her only options are surgery or catheter. She wants neither. Any suggestion? And that's from Nancy in Wilton.
Yeah, that's really challenging. You know, it's tough because oftentimes the therapies that we have, they're just not appropriate and not really safe for elderlies. I would say if she's feeling fine and doing okay with the Depends and the pads, sometimes that's the lesser of evils, because once we age, it's very difficult to get that perfect. And oftentimes folks are challenged with a lot of other factors, such as, you know, difficulty with mobility. They can't hop up quickly to the toilet. Issues with medications that cause them to produce more urine, such as water pills or diuretics. So there's usually a host of other issues going on that are making this problem more complicated and more difficult to treat than it would be if in somebody who was younger. So it's tough. Sometimes the cure is worse than the disease in that scenario. There are a couple of things that are safe to try, but definitely that would be something that should be evaluated by a urologist and have a frank discussion about what kind of expectations could be had.
Urology Today on Medical Monday, Dr. Maria Voznesensky joins us, and back to the phones we go. Joyce in Scotia. Joyce, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a prolapsed cervix, and I had that just before the coronavirus started, and it becomes lower in my body, and I want to know, can you live without a cervix, have that removed? I have perfect urination. I have no problem with that or the stool. I just have the cervix, and it's kind of irritating, and I want to know whether you need anesthesia or what kind of knockout procedure, whether I have to be put in the hospital or whether they do it outside the hospital, or just what's entailed.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, as far as a must, I would say it's not dangerous to leave it be, certainly until you're more comfortable having treatment for it. The key thing is just make sure you're putting something on it to prevent chafing. Vaseline or coconut oil over the counter is fine. As far as options, there's a non-surgical option you can try, something called a pessary, which is basically a soft plastic insert, and the goal of it is to try and help push everything up. Not everybody's comfortable with them, but it's a nice non-surgical option to try. It's the kind of thing that gets changed on a monthly basis, and it's basically a soft plastic ring. So that's about the non-surgery option that exists. Next steps, if you're wanting to get it fixed, generally would be a surgery. If the cervix is coming down, I'm assuming the uterus is in place, so that would actually need to get addressed as well.
The uterus, perfect place, and that I had no swelling of the uterus or anything. The cervix, I could see it's like a ball, and I check it to make sure it looks pink and healthy. However, it's kind of, you know, I'm an active person. I like to walk and do these things, and my activities have been cut way back because of the fact it's there, you know, and it's getting more irritating. I wanted something that would just resolve the cervix part of it without affecting the uterus and the other organs that are in there, if that's possible? Is this an operation?
Difficult. You know, I would say if the cervix is falling down, that means the uterus is falling down, which means to address and put everything back in place, usually you'd be looking at removing the uterus and then suspending everything. So in my hands, you know, that's a tag team approach where I work with GYN oncology or GYN to do the hysterectomy. And then if you're a robotic candidate, we would do, you know, the lifting with tissues internally with mesh, or there's an option to do the same thing vaginally. So Definitely sounds like this would be something that would probably be a good surgical fix for you if you're active and, you know, don't want to put up with it. The pessaries, I think, are a good choice for folks who want to avoid surgery or maybe are not good surgical candidates. So, yeah, it definitely sounds like something that I think you would benefit from by having it addressed and fixed.
Generally, it
varies depending who does it, but sometimes can be a home the same day surgery, sometimes spend one night, depending on kind of the timing of things, at least in my practice.
Joyce, thank you very much for the call. We're joined today by Dr. Maria Vosnesensky, and let's go to Eckerd. And Mark, you're on.
Is that me?
That's you.
Oh, hi, Ray.
Hello.
Hi, doctor.
Hi.
I had bladder cancer about 15 years ago, and I didn't die. I'm still here. I'm 73 years old. I'm calling because of some days I pass enormous quantities of urine, maybe over a gallon, and some days I pass very little urine. And I don't know. I'm thinking maybe I should see the kidney doctor, but I don't want to bother the doctor if it's not, you know, much. But I notice because I get weighed every day, and my weight goes up and down. I could have 3 days in a row the same, and then I could have it go up 3 pounds or down 2 pounds.
Huh.
And do you have some heart and kidney conditions as well?
I had surgery on, and the surgeon pointed out that one of the kidneys is full of cysts.
Mm-hmm. Are you taking water pills to help you get that weight down? Is that part of what causes it to fluctuate?
No, I don't take water pills. I think my weight is probably normal.
Okay.
And I have this wonderful book from Estelis,
uh-huh.
A Guide to Managing Overactive Bladder.
Mm-hmm.
It's a wonderful little book they gave me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have that in the office.
Nothing
I
for
know
me
that book.
Because if I take Detrol or whatever, I can't function because I have Sjogren's disease.
I think definitely a visit would be appropriate for you. It sounds like, you know, you have lots of things that could be explored and potentially improved upon. So I don't feel like you're wasting people's time. You know, it's very considerate of you to think that, but we're, you know, docs are there for you to see them, so we're happy to see you.
Well, Mark, thanks for the call. Now, is a gallon of urine kind of a normal amount? Or, I mean, what's the average amount of urine a person will relieve themselves of each day?
It's hard. I mean, I think a lot of it depends on how hydrated you are, how much you're sweating. You know, to some degree, intake equals output, but not for everybody. You know, a high-performance athlete probably is going to, you know, not sweat as much as maybe I would if I had to run a marathon. So, you know, I think there's variations in physique and fitness in, you know, hydration quality and status that mm-hmm. we have. So it's a little bit of a tough thing. I would say as long as your urine's a nice clear color and you're not feeling thirsty, then I wouldn't worry too much about it.
All righty. Over to Wappingers Falls. George, you're up.
Hey. Hi. This is George from Wappingers Falls.
Hi.
And I just have a question for the doctor. If I have choices, okay, about hereditary traits that I know are existing because I know that are very extremely likely because my sister has evidence of oxalate kidney stones. And her son has the same oxalate kidney stones, and I have oxalate kidney stones. So the question is there any way I can interrupt that passing down to others so that when you know, like with sexual contact, I cannot pass it on. Or is that something that I have control over, or is hereditary? That's it. You got it. You're going to pass it along, or if you don't have, you know, what options do I have, if any? Thanks.
I would say short of watching what kind of children you're conceiving, I don't know that there's really too much that can be done. I don't know of any therapy that can, you know, select genes to pick in your offspring. So maybe in, you know, 15, 20 years, we'll be able to have designer offspring and select no kidney stone, you know, checkbox on that. But no, these days, unfortunately, it's just a roll of the genetic dice.
All right, George, thanks a lot for the call. But you wouldn't want to live in a world with programmable future children, would you, Doc?
I mean, my job security would be bad if I didn't have stones.
Oh, so. You see, you make a great point. All right, we have enough time for another call here. Sandra in Great Barrington, you have about a minute to pose your question.
Yes, I'd like to know what the prognosis and treatment could be for a prolapsed bladder in an 80-year-old woman.
8-0? Yeah, is that what I heard?
Yes, 8-0, yes.
Yeah. Well, it depends. You know, it depends on the health, the spryness of that individual. You know, these days people are living longer and longer. So if they're a healthy person, I think prognosis could be excellent if they chose to have surgery and it was the correct choice. Alternatively, there's that pessary that I mentioned previously in the show, which is a non-surgical therapy that can be tried. But generally, a lot of good choices, I think, that are available.
What does that therapy entail?
The pessary, so it's a soft plastic insert that is placed vaginally, and its job is to basically hoist and lift everything up. They come in different shapes and sizes, and they're fitted either at urology or GYN, and then folks go and try them out and make sure they feel comfortable wearing them. They don't work for everybody, depending on their anatomy, but it's a good starting point.
Go ahead, Sandra.
What if she doesn't do anything and is okay with that?
As long as she's not having any skin breakdown, chafing from the prolapse, infections from not emptying her bladder, it is okay to just leave it be. It's not dangerous.
Okay. Would there be a potential of cancer?
No, I wouldn't anticipate that. You know, what we worry about with the prolapse is if it's actively sticking out, then the tissue can chafe, it can bleed, it can become inflamed, ulcerated. And then if there's a component of not emptying your bladder because of the bulge and the change in angulation, sometimes that can be predispose people to urinary tract infections. So those would be the two things I would want to make sure were not happening. And if not, then it's a quality of life issue, and you don't have to do anything about it if it's not bothering them.
Is there any exercises like Kegel or anything that could...
You can certainly do them. I don't think they're going to reverse it. It's really at that point the tissues are very stretched out. It's very difficult to get them to pop back up in shape without a surgical fix.
All right, Sandra, that's where we will have to leave it. Dr. Maria Voznesensky, beautiful job. Thank you for, again, hanging around during the governor's press conference. And next time you're on, we'll do a whole hour, okay?
Yeah, happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much. Support comes from Berkshire Orthopedic Associates, an affiliate of Berkshire Health Systems, providing orthopedic services in the Berkshires, including Mako robotic surgery, sports medicine, and anterior hip surgery. 413-499-6600. Well, once again, thanks to Dr. Maria Voznesensky of Capital Region Urology for joining us. Thank you for listening. Thank you for the calls. Sorry if we did not get to your call. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer, our producer, Jackie Orchard. Joe Makowicz took the calls. I'm Ray Graff. All right. We've handled the urology issue. Tomorrow, we will handle the doggy issue or the kitty issue. Yep, it's Pets and Vets. Dr. Ron Scharf joins us tomorrow at 2. Get your questions ready now. Stand by for the Media Project.